Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has over 120 podcasts containing information about aviation technologies and pilot experiences for general and business aviation, from home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech. Plain Talk provides information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 2,200 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years experience in the technology, telecommunications, and aviation industries. We're at the coolest place in Toronto right now. I'd love to welcome Billy Lowe, pilot that I've known for just a huge amount of time, and a new friend, Darlene, who wants to rename anonymous. I'll tell you her name at the end. And I'd like to welcome the two of you to the Plain Talk cockpit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
And we're here at an auspicious event hosted at Darlene's home in the Greater Toronto area, celebrating the infamous Billy Lowe's birthday.
I don't know about infamous, but we're celebrating, and I really, really want to thank Darlene for this, because this is quite a surprise, quite a surprise.
We had a whole ton of the Buttonville Flying Club and a whole ton of 99s at this very exclusive event celebrating Billy's milestone birthday. Billy, when did you start flying?
I started flying in 1989. I got my license in 1989.
What was your first airplane?
Back then, I flew the club airplane for the Downsview Flying Club, which is Charlie Golf Delta Yankee Oscar.
So Cherokee.
BYO, a Cherokee 150 with the Hershey Bar wings. And the reason I got into the Cherokee is because I started off with a 172 and I could not reach the pedals.
I know that problem well.
So I used a couple of cushions for my first flight, and it was very uncomfortable. And somebody mentioned Downsview has a Cherokee 140B. And so I went up there, and my instructor was Bob Gaughan. And he just called me the other day and wished me a happy birthday.
I saw Bob at the Oshawa COPA flight meeting this past Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
Thursday, this past
How
Thursday.
How does he look?
He looks awesome. He, yeah, too, was an instructor for me. Did a little IFR work
I
with Bob.
I thought he did, with you and Bob Jewett.
That's right. Such a calm personality.
The guy was the best. He was a very good instructor. Very good.
So what made you decide to become a pilot?
Oh, always loved it. Always wanted to be a pilot ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. And couldn't fly commercially because I couldn't get my license because of my eye.
Right.
I'm technically monocular. So I have no vision in the left eye, except for some peripheral vision.
But for the audience who don't know Billy, I've flown a bajillion hours with Billy all over Ontario and down to the Bahamas. And I can tell you he's an absolutely superb pilot.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you.
Welcome. So I think you're probably so well known for the RV that you owned with John Van Leesch out, GDOC.
GDOC. We were partners, and I always said that John owned more of the airplane than me because he used to do the maintenance and I used to hold the wrench for him.
So, moral support.
Yeah. But John did a lot of work on that airplane, and we've flown a lot together with Mikey. Mikey is John's little beetle.
Beagle.
Beetle. Yeah, like a Snoopy dog.
And folks, Mikey was really part of the flying club, not only joining us at our Buttonville Flying Club coffee clutches at the airport, but flying in the airplane and heading down to the Bahamas and really part of the flying club was, you know, if we think of John and Billy, we can never forget about Mikey.
Yeah, Mikey was a good dog. Mikey fell asleep every time we took off.
And he didn't even need headsets. It was amazing.
He just went in the back seat and, well, no seat, but he went in the baggage compartment and just fell asleep.
He had flown so much with you folks that, you know, it was just, it was part of his life.
And he was also a chick magnet. We'd go on the beach and everybody would want to pet Mikey. And so we'd meet all the girls on the beach because they all came over to meet Mikey.
This would be on trips to the Bahamas.
Yeah, mostly. Sometimes when we stopped in Fort Lauderdale, because we used to use Fort Lauderdale Exec as one of our jump-off points. And we used to go to the beach one day, and Mikey was always with us. So Fort Lauderdale has been quite something, and this whole event today is all because of the trip to Fort Lauderdale and meeting Darlene on that flight. That was priceless.
So tell us a little bit about this commercial flight and sitting beside a complete stranger.
Well, the thing is, it's only a three-hour flight, and nowadays when I do the flight, I do it so often that I don't even pay for a seat selection. So when it came up as the middle seat, I thought, it's all right. It's only 2.5 hours, 3 hour flight. And when I sat down in between Darlene and Mark. And they started to talk to each other. And I go, oh, you know each other. She says, yeah, it's my son. I says, oh, you want to move over so you can be closer? They said, no, it's all right. And I was fine. But then we found out that we have flying as a mutual connection, because the pilot said he was gonna, when he takes off, he's gonna leave the wheels down. And we thought, she says, what do you think about that? And I says, well, as a pilot, I don't know what they're doing. If they're doing anything with the ground, with the landing gear, they should do it on the ground. We still don't know. Did you find out? No. But that's how we got talking, and we never stopped talking the whole way down.
So what was your first thoughts about Billy Lowe, this interesting person sitting beside you on a flight to Fort Lauderdale?
Well, my first thought was, as he was walking down the aisle towards the back where we were sitting, was, oh, I hope he's not coming to sit in the middle between me and my son. And sure enough, he did. But I was also grateful that there was lots of room for him. And we very quickly realized that we had so many people in common. And I had heard all of the stories of the Buttonville Flying Club, especially the trips to the Bahamas and the island hopping. So we basically went through all of the people that we knew together, which was quite a few. And it even turned out that my son's friend worked for Billy's son. There was just like multiple connections. And it was the fastest flight I've ever had. It was like, we don't know where the time went. And then we landed. And we've been best friends ever since.
That's very cool. Culminating with today's little surprise party.
It was incredible. I really can't thank you enough, Darlene. This is the very first time I've ever had a birthday party. Plus a surprise birthday party.
And you're only 29.
And I'm only 29. Really surprised. I looked at the video and it didn't show the face that I thought I would have shown. Because the biggest surprise was looking in the corner and seeing my own son and his wife. And I'm going, what are you doing here? And no, because I had forgotten about Mark and Eric. Relationship. Mark is Darlene's son, and Eric is his best friend that worked with Ian for a couple of years, I think. So Ian knows him quite well.
And two degrees of separation.
Well, again, there's no degrees anymore. There's just, you know, opportunity to talk, and once you start talking, you know that there's something between you. There's a story.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention that as I talked to people and invited them to the party today, the response was spectacular. And I mentioned to people that even though I haven't known Billy that long, I feel like I've known him a very long time, and everybody had the same sentiment. And most of the comments that came back were that everybody loves Billy.
Well, it's true.
That's very flattering. And I get along with everybody, but I didn't realize how much sentiment there are, and really could feel it in the room. Everybody, you know, Bill, who I haven't seen for a couple of years, and you know, all Aki and Henry and all of them. I talked to Barb. I didn't talk to her. I texted her when Darlene, that was one of the first names that came up, was Barbara Santa Maria. And Darlene texted her from the flight. And then when I got to Florida, I texted Barbie and she says, "Where are you in Florida?" Because I said, "Well, I'm down, Melbourne is about 3 hours away from Boca." And she says, "Oh, okay, if you can find your way up one day, I'm here in Melbourne." So it was nice to see her as well, and everybody.
I think Billy, from my personal experience, you know, knowing you, you have this joie de vivre. You have this love of life as you've gone through mostly an uphill roller coaster of life experiences. And I have to say, I know this is perhaps getting a little personal, but you know, as you had your medical challenges, lost your license, sent out to the flying club, you know, I have to sell all my aviation gear, headsets, and so on and so forth. And then visiting you, you know, at hospital with a whole bunch of other cancer patients and really seeing this positive mental attitude, whereas the other folks in the room, I could see they had thrown the towel in, and you could feel death on them, but not on you. Visiting with our long lost buddy David Grossman at that time really instilled upon me the notion that Billy's a survivor, and I was so delighted a few years later when you sent out an email to the flying club saying, "I want all my stuff back. I got my medical. I've kicked this. I'm in remission. It's all good."
Yeah, that was a rough time. But you know something, Phil? It wasn't really a roller coaster for me, because it was always, it was always a part of my attitude. And attitude was everything. And the attitude that I'm going to survive. It's not going to beat me. And that's always been my attitude, and it still is. You know, every day is a gift for me, because it's all about how you approach the day and the attitude that you have. And you have a choice of changing your attitude. Even if you have to lie to yourself, you can change your attitude for the better. And so attitude for me is everything. You know, you just have to keep talking to yourself about keeping the right attitude. As a matter of fact, I used to give a seminar about the right attitude. And I used to give out these little pins that says attitude. And I told people to wear it on the right side, because you got to have the right attitude.
It's very true. Very true. So Darlene, you're a little new to the flying culture?
Yes, I just got my license during COVID. It was a great opportunity to take some time and do something that I always wanted to do. So I went to Collingwood, to Genesis Flight College, which was a really good fit for me. And I got my license there, and then after that, rented airplanes from there. And I just love flying out of Collingwood.
So are you thinking of renting the Diamond, taking it down to Boca, and jumping across to the Bahamas with Bahamas Billy?
Would you please talk to the owner of Genesis Flight College and see if I could do that? They might not want to part with an airplane that long.
Sounds like what you need to do is buy your own Diamond, lease it back to them, and then you can fly it anytime you want.
Now, there's an idea.
But we've done that. I mean, as Phil knows, David Grossman rented the airplane from Downsview Flying Club and took it down to the Bahamas with 1 year with us. And I've taken airplane from Toronto Airways down. They usually have some special, you know, like you have to fly or you have to pay for so many hours a day.
Right, right. The difference is that this is a flight school. Hmm. So their airplanes are flying every day when they're not in maintenance.
And nowadays it's getting really tight.
And it's a very busy flight school.
Yeah.
I think the challenge is most flight schools in Canada are uber busy. And as you said, it's really challenging for GA pilots that are renters, not owners. But fortunately, we have these invention of that little fad. I'm not sure how long it's going to be around. It's called the internet. Flightclub.com platform that brings renters and owners together is a great way to find a local aircraft that you can get block time on, and hopefully it's decent hardware.
Is that popular in Canada?
Yes, it actually, the founders of the platform learned to fly and had an aircraft at Buttonville.
Amazing.
And now they've got, I would be pulling numbers out of the air, so I don't want to guess, but I can tell you that they have owners and renters all across Canada, and they've expanded into the United States with aircraft in Florida.
Yeah. There you
Let's
go.
Let's do it, Darlene.
Let's right? do it.
I told Darlene that anytime she wants to go flying, I'll fly with her, even though I haven't flown with too many people since I gave up my license.
And do you remember taking EVU down to the Bahamas? A
couple of times I took EVU down, the 172, owned by Doug and Deb Peel, who left the airplane with me for a year, which was quite shocking, but it was just in between when I sold the Grumman and was buying GDOC. And they said, you can keep the airplane for a year because we're going down to Arizona. I said, I'll bring it down for you. I've got the maps and everything. They said, no, you keep it here. And in the meantime, I want you to also put an autopilot in it for me. So I did everything. And then Deb and I flew it to the Bahamas and had a couple of interesting
crosswind problems.
Deb tried to land it at Marsh Harbor three times, didn't feel comfortable putting it down, so we went up to Treasure Key, which is just up the street with an opposite runway, had a different crosswind up there, tried two times, gave up, and we said, now we're running out of fuel, so we're going up to Freeport, which is a longer runway, and you know, you've got to be able to land there. And she did land it at Freeport, and we had to stay the night in Freeport because we couldn't get out for nightfall. So EVU was quite an experience too, and I don't like high wing. So EVU was a 172 with beautiful interior, beautiful paint job. But I just don't like the way those things like to float.
As it turns out, my son Benji ended up with block time on EVU.
EVU.
Flew it a lot out of
Bonville. After it had been sold. After Deb and Doug sold it to
Henry. That's Henry, right.
The dentist.
Henry the dentist, who with, I think, the engine had about 1,800 hours on it.
And I think it was on.
Yeah,
it was off to 2000 because we were talking about putting an SB in there at 180.
So he quickly sent the engine out to Penyan for overhaul, and I flew many flights with Benji in it, and you know, as dad, air dad, if you will, and just a beautiful flying 172.
But Benji doesn't fly that anymore?
Sadly, as we all know, one of the outcomes of the pandemic was 172 prices going crazy. And Henry sold it down to some folks, I believe, in the U.S. And, you know, 172 prices are just crazy stupid. $150,000 U.S. for a timed out 172 with, you know, basic avionics, et cetera. It's just uber crazy. Billy, if you had that single experience that's top of mind, what might that be?
Flying the Cirrus. The Cirrus was one really nice machine to fly, and especially Joe's. I flew both Joe's and Attilio's. They were both the same year. They were both bought the same year, and they're the same model. But Joe kept up his Cirrus a lot better than Attilio, upgraded the autopilot. It was just a beauty to fly. And I took that down to the Bahamas a couple of times as well. Once Joe and I flew down, and then Joe went on the cruise, and I took it over to the Bahamas and then came back, and Joe came back off the cruise and brought it back home. But unfortunately, Joe packed it in.
Well, Joe broke the airplane. He didn't die.
No, he didn't die. He, and thank God he and Jan, who were here tonight, both walked away from that incident.
I think he pulled the CAPS ballistic parachute below 800 feet and lived to
He was disoriented, and he felt he was upside down, so he blew the parachute in the Carolinas. It was unfortunate, but it was good that they walked away. And they were going on a cruise as well, again. They just rented a car and drove down to Florida and hopped on the cruise. So they were both very lucky.
I have to say that seeing our flying club members on American TV with his beloved Cirrus in a church parking lot.
Yeah. The preacher, whose name was Church, had just buried his dog right at the spot that they stopped at the fence when they landed in with the parachute. But that airplane was a dream to fly, but it was a beauty to fly. And it was a very good, nice, fast, and responsive airplane.
I had the opportunity to head down to Knoxville with the Canadian Cirrus team to be part of a SR-22 current gen delivery, and flying an SR-22 from Toronto to Knoxville with 50 hours on it. It was just an amazing experience.
Now, nothing can compare to GDOC, by the way. GDOC was a pretty fast airplane, only a two-seater, but it was very fast and very, very economical to maintain.
What kind of airplane?
GDOC. It was an RV-6A. It's a Vans 6A, and it was built in 1998 or 97 by Dr. Cocker in Richmond Hill. And that's why he got the name GDOC. Funny story about that, too. He had reserved the letters DRJ for Dr. John. When he finished the airplane, he went to Transport Canada to get the Charlie Golf Delta Romeo Juliet, and they said it had been reserved. So he says, okay, do you have GDOC? And he got GDOC. Then he went home and found out that he was the one that reserved it.
Oh, that's funny.
So he ended up with GDOC. But GDOC, I flew GDOC, I would say no less than 25, 30 times to the Bahamas.
Wow.
And loved every minute of it. Flew it and took off one day with the P-2 cover on. I told you that story, Darlene. Wendy was with me in that flight. And I called the tower to say I'm coming back because I think my pitot cover is still on. And they said, are you okay coming back in? I said, yeah, sure. And I landed. And it wasn't until after I landed and a couple months after when somebody said to me, how did you land that thing without airspeed? And I said, I just listened to the engine and I know the airplane well enough that I just landed it without even thinking. And they said, you know, that's an emergency. I said, nah, I just landed the damn thing without the pitot tube.
And, you know, with that said, Billy, and that all that inherent experience, how many hours do you have?
I have just under 2,000 hours.
Wow, that's huge.
In 25 years, I was doing 100 hours a year on average. And that's one of the things that sold one of my airplanes to. I had a Grumman Traveler, AA-5A. And when the guy came up from the States and looked at the logbook and says, this thing's flying every day. And I says, yeah, I fly it every day. As anytime I have the time, I fly it. He says, that's what makes it sold. Because he knew he could rely on the airplane, because I flew that airplane 600 hours. Took that to the Bahamas at least 10 times as well.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. So, Darlene, what's on the horizon for you?
For me, on the horizon is just keeping my skills up and recreational flying. And if I'm lucky, maybe a trip to the Bahamas with Billy.
Oh, I would love it. I would. That's one of the only reasons that I would get back into an airplane.
Billy and I were in Staniel Key one year, where they filmed the Thunderball, James Bond Thunderball movie. And so not only were we able to go snorkeling in the grotto, a bunch of us in the flying club rented a Zodiac to get there, but later that evening at the marina, Billy and I are at the bar having a drink. And we look up, and we see this black and white photo of Sean Connery standing at the bar having a drink. And it was just so interesting.
I've gone through a couple of attractions. One was, I thought about doing the van life thing for a while. And I did a little bit of it with my nephew's van in Vancouver. But that kind of went away. I've been cruising a lot on Carnival, but I think that's coming to an end too. So I don't know what's next. We'll just have to wait and see.
I can certainly see you with an RV and a pup tent in the back, and right, going a little bit of a traveling romantic, going from airport to airport.
Well, I thought about the license again, but I'm going to have to take the whole thing over. I know the medical wouldn't be a problem because I've talked to them about it. And he was saying, anytime you're ready, come on out and we'll do the course.
Well, certainly if you decide you don't want to do the process to get your license back, which can't be that arduous, I can see you as a drone pilot extraordinaire.
I even thought about that. But again, there are so many intricacies and so many, well, I even don't agree so much with the way these guys are flying these drones these days. I think it's become very irresponsible.
Well, we need someone with your maturity to bring that responsibility to the younger folks.
Mike and I have talked about it a little bit because Mike's deep into it, Michael Martin, and I have a lot of respect for Michael. We talked a little bit about it, and he even talked about what to start with. Right now, I don't really know what's next, and just wide open for whatever.
I think it's very much like flying. The winds and the thermals will take you to your next.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And again, like I live every day for the moment, so I don't know what's in the next, what's behind curtain number one or curtain number two.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the Plane Talk cockpit, and especially on such an auspicious day.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at plaintalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at plaintalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.